From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum, Bravo is launching a new reality television show called Silicon Valley, profiling the decadent lives of young rich entrepreneurs. Some in the tech industry say they're nervous about being mischaracterized. We'll look at the tech industry and its culture in the hour ahead. What culture, some might say, but others see much distinctive in the ways of living and cultural forms of expression in Silicon Valley. What do you think of the culture of Silicon Valley? Is there a Silicon Valley culture? Join us for Forum next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of our Forum program. A new reality show slated for viewing, on the Bravo channel and centering on life in Silicon Valley has caused a good deal of concern in the Valley. In the trailer and in pre-publicity, we are told that the show, whose executive producer, by the way, is Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg's sister Randi, will feature young technology entrepreneurs living together in a house and doing a good deal of hard partying. Will they be representative of real life in Silicon Valley seems to be the burning question presently at hand in the Valley. But the real burning question for this Forum Hour is the extent to which a culture in Silicon Valley exists or can be defined, and that is where we want to focus the second hour. Let me tell you who is joining us for the hour. We have, a full slate of people with us here in studio. Susan McTavish Best is an entrepreneur, formerly head of her own public relations firm for startups. Her new project is called LivingMctavish.com, featuring tips for entertaining, and she's known by some as the Martha Stewart of Silicon Valley, and maybe for older people we would mention Elsa Maxwell. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's a name that the older listeners in that demographic will recognize. Joseph Smarr is also with us in studio this morning. He is software engineer at Google, who is a co-founder of Google Plus, and welcome to the program.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Good to have you. Also good to have Jameis McNiven, is the owner of Bucks of Woodside, famous place, Silicon Valley hub for deals and all sorts of things, particularly in terms of what maybe the culture of Silicon Valley is. Welcome, Jameis McNiven.
Thanks, Michael.
Good to have you, and also good to have Tasmin Raja, who's an interactive editor for Mother Jones. And Mother Jones, of course, is well-known as a nonprofit news organization.
Thank you.
Good to have you all here. Susan McTavish Best, let me begin with you because you are known as the Maven, and you have all sorts of influence in Silicon Valley and know all kinds of people there. Is there a culture in Silicon Valley?
There is a culture, but it's a culture of ideas, and it's a culture of futurists, I think.
Culture of ideas and futurists, but a culture mainly identified with the youth of Silicon Valley. If you're 30, you're kind of middle-aged.
Well, I'm not sure what anyone calls middle-aged these days, but it's certainly younger people like to come move here and start companies and build ideas. But I think those who have been successful here stick around. They don't tend to build an idea that's successful and then flee off to Saint-Tropez and live on a boat. They tend to stick around here.
Well, it also has a reputation for being an engineering culture, which seems to preclude in the minds of many people the sort of ostentation that one sees with Wall Street culture, if there is such a thing as Wall Street culture. That sounds oxymoronic to my ear, but you know, they're not into showing off as much, more like Steve Jobs, who could live in a modest home and be a Zen Buddhist and also have a lot of money.
Yeah, it's not a show-offy culture here at all. It's not an ostentatious culture. In fact, I think it's frowned upon. There might be a flurry of acquisitions for, you know, a new car and a house, but the house might remain empty for quite a while without much furniture.
Joseph Smarr, you don't have to have a Tesla. In fact, maybe there are some who don't want to have a Tesla to show that they're not a part of that car, or not have a limo, for example.
Right. Well, it's funny. Not only is there this sort of, you know, classic geek culture thing of the more kind of dressed down and scruffy you are, the better a programmer you must be. And if you're showing off too much, you must be a suit and not someone worth paying attention to. But I think also, you know, all our idols from, you know, the founders of Google and Apple, like you say, and the startups, they're all dressing down and they just want to come to work and everybody just wants to build. And so I don't think you have that same aspirational culture around acquiring material possessions for the purpose of, you know, conspicuous consumption, but rather people who want to change the world and then get more money and use it to keep changing the world.
Well, you know, let's talk about that, changing the world, because that seems to come up with a lot of those who are in the heart of Silicon Valley. And for some people, this doesn't necessarily seem like work that is perhaps changing the world. This is work that's maybe changing social networking or changing the way we do things with our apps or whatever. Mm-hmm. But and it, like you say, it's very much a world of money and making money and engineers. Is there more of that, or is there more of the idea of the social commitment or political commitment to, I want to change the world?
I mean, I think people here feel like you really can change the world and make a good living in the process. And I think that's why so many of the best and brightest choose to come here, because whereas there are other ways to maybe go have an impact on society through the media or through government or things like that, they tend to be pretty slow and hard to, you know, crack into the establishment and generally not very well paying. And here it's just so commonplace to see people come out of nowhere and have a profound impact on the world. And I guess I'm biased working in social networking, but I think it's having an amazing positive impact on how people communicate and stay in touch. I mean, I have a baby girl and my family is far flung, and thanks to, you know, Google Hangouts and all the rest, they can all stay in touch with each other, and they're watching her grow and she knows them, and, you know, and not to mention Arab Spring and everything else in between. So
you're thinking about the future, but what does changing the world actually mean, as opposed to is it tech advances, you know, like Alexander Graham Bell? Is that changing the world, or is it just that you're thinking about the social impact on the future?
Well, I think, yeah, it's, the more technology changes, the more people can use it to do the things they've always really cared about. How do they stay in touch? How do they learn about the world? How do they make good decisions? You know, how do they have a good time? And technology is touching all of those things, but it's really just amplifying, I think, the basic human drives that have always been around.
Well, there is this trailer that I alluded to in my introduction. Kim Taylor, in fact, is the person who you're going to hear here. And she talks about Silicon Valley culture and says, well, let's hear what she says.
Being a geek is like being the new rock stars.
Bravo's following these hot young professionals with big dreams on the road to becoming techie superstars.
Some of the brightest minds in the world are right here.
Silicon Valley is high school, but it's only the smart kids and everyone has a lot of money.
On Silicon Valley.
Well, that's the trailer with all the hoopla and everything else and hype, and you can understand the consternation from those in Silicon Valley who say they're not going to represent us the way we need to be representative. And Tasneem Raja, well, actually, she modified that in her tweet. She said, in a tweet afterwards, she said, "I apologize for saying it's like high school. It's really like middle
junior
school
high.
Or junior high." Yeah. Is it like high school with, you know, your sort of star system and popular kids versus the not so popular kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing with this show is that the problem actually starts with mainstream culture having this skewed perception of what a geek is, you know, the stereotype of the under-socialized mouth breather living in a basement and not having any social skills.
I mean, live in garages where they invent things.
Sure.
That's the mythology. Yeah.
You know, I think that movies like The Social Network and, you know, the interest in Steve Jobs really shows that mainstream culture is ready to redefine what it means to be a geek, and a lot of people in the industry are working hard to change that perception. But I think skewing to a stereotype of hard partying, drinking, excess is actually itself an erroneous stereotype.
I read your article in Mother Jones, though. You were talking about programmers, frat boys. I mean, sort of over-testosterone, over-sex, males mainly
right.
Is part of the, really defining the culture.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're seeing a lot of young people who are interested in this industry who maybe 5-10 years ago might have considered jobs in Wall Street or law firms. And this is where they're seeing job opportunities. This is where they're seeing, you know, lots of money changing hands rapidly. That's very exciting. But I think that the emergence of a more sort of macho, testosterone-fueled culture is actually trying to overcompensate and open up interest in working in this space to people who might not have. But it's actually excluding a lot of people who otherwise might want to get into programming themselves.
So how are geeks being redefined? I was once told that – I actually got an email from somebody. You shouldn't use that word geek. It's discriminatory and it's prejudicial. And, you know, I feel like a geek that I'm being maligned when I hear that word. But how is this whole notion being
– Right. Changed? Well, I mean, I think that this programmer subset, you know, you could describe it as a culture. You could describe it as an aesthetic. You really do see it play out both in satirical terms, but also in recruitment materials. For instance, this company called Clout, a social analytics company, in a recruitment flyer said, you know, want to bro down and crush code? Clout is hiring. So it's this idea that, you know, the frat house mentality is pervasive in Silicon Valley. You know, I think it is a bit tongue in cheek, but we are also seeing it play out in some real ways.
I think it's mostly a recruitment tool, too. I mean, things like hackathons are, they're somewhat passe, I think, this year. But if one does have them and a company does have them like Clout or the like, it's really a recruitment tool to get mostly young guys to come out and, you know, apply for a job.
Well, you're the party thrower. Somebody said, who throws a party in Palo Alto? In fact, let's bring Joseph Spahr in this. Jameis McGivern in this. You say, I think you were quoting the New York Times article saying, we're so bland.
Well, You know, we are. I think about this reality show, and I think they're going to have to make that up because
they do on all the other ones. Yeah, why should this be any different?
The lights go out at 10, and everybody's up really early, and so there is not a whole lot of big dramatic spin in the valley because
that is,
you know,
true. Very true.
Except for really nice cars and houses that you can't see except by the in your private helicopter, it's just sort of an invisibility. People come into Bucks all the time and they say, hey, where's it? I want to go down to Google and take a tour. And it's not really an amusement park. They actually work there. But people think you could sort of come and find the essence, and they often go away disappointed because there is no there here.
Well, you meet so many entrepreneurs, as they call themselves, although I was reading an article about how the word entrepreneur has been hijacked along with CEO and angel investor, first by Francisco Dial, talking about, also the digital divide in Silicon Valley, which there is a real – the people in the service industry and the custodians and so forth have a very different life. But you're meeting all these – in your place of business, all these kind of high flyers, and I'm just wondering to what extent they have a strong work ethic, and that becomes their cultural definition.
Well, it's true. I mean, it's really all about work. You know, Bucks is a business breakfast place. I mean, people are there early. At 7 o'clock in the morning, they're talking to each other. The entrepreneurs are meeting the money, and this has been going on for 21 years. And, you know, there's an excitement you see. The laptops are flapping on and off and the sketches on the napkins. And that's been going on for a long time, really since 95 when Netscape broke it all open. Mm-hmm. So we feel in Silicon Valley that, you know, we can humbly say that we're the center of the world because people come from all over. I see it at Bucks. They come from Switzerland and Sweden and Swaziland, all over the place to be part of this. They come in groups, they come singly, and they want to make that deal. And we like to say it's not about the money, but once the money's handled, it really is about this great effort to craft the future.
I think the culture here is very
Susan McTavish.
Yeah,
does.
Work hard, play healthy. But I'm just not sure that that necessarily translates so well to a reality TV show. And when I say play healthy, it's, you know, kite surfing or road biking, not necessarily super sociable activities, but adrenaline filled.
Well, and then, you know, if you want to judge a culture by its gossip, what do people talk about? I think I agree with James. They're mostly talking about work. They're talking about deal flow, or they're talking about what's the hot new startup, or did you see who invested in whom, or things like that. And it's so to
that's not going to play well on reality.
Yeah,
TV.
Right.
No,
well, and
all.
To the extent that we are, I mean, I believe in work hard, play hard, but I think most people aren't talking about the play hard in their spare time. They're talking about the work hard. So that kind of shows you where their head
too.
Is at.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I think this show could go one of two ways, right? The Bravo mold
that's
of
name Roger.
The Top Chef, the Project Runway, or the Desperate Housewives. So I think Top Chef and Project Runway actually do a pretty good job of showing you what it's actually like to work in this industry. Sure.
And it's aspirational because they're talented.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, they have to balance the over-the-top personalities that play well on television. But you do, I think, come away with a decent sense of mm-hmm. the tools, technique, and training that it takes to actually make it. Mm-hmm. I don't think, based on the casting that I've seen for this show, that that's what Bravo is going to do here.
Well, they're mainly casting for good looks, I think. And then they have to find drama within the reality show. I don't think the pioneering spirit is going to necessarily be a part of this reality show. Let's hear, actually, you know, that stuff that's been going feverish on the internet, the word that we can't use on radio, blank, that people talk about. This is the version in Silicon Valley.
I already reblogged that. I reblogged it and retweeted it. I retweeted it, I reblogged it, and I checked into it.
This app is so elegant.
It's stealth, so I can't say too much right now.
I didn't even finish high school. He's like 14. He had his first exit when he was 9.
Think of it like an Instagram for hamburgers.
He's a genius. It's like Pandora for cats.
The whole royal family invested.
It's like Airbnb for Facebook games.
Who has a party in Palo Alto?
Think of it as a Netflix for YouTube.
It's Tom Conrad and Kate Imbach, a video that was produced by them, what stuff, we'll call it, that people say in Silicon Valley.
That's accurate. It rings true to me.
Isn't it pretty good? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it also shows what a small, insular world we live in with sort of hermetic networks. You know, it's a tiny world here. I'm not sure how funny people would find us in Connecticut.
That's right. Yeah.
Ha. You know, one thing I'm really curious about is, if they're actually trying to portray what it's like to put together a real startup, how are you going to attract technical talent that's actually going to want to participate in a show like this, right? I mean, Ideas are cheap. Anybody can have a good idea, like what we just heard in that.
Ideas
reel.
Are all what Silicon Valley is about. I mean, really, when you get down
ideas and execution.
Yeah,
I was gonna say it is the old thing about 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. I think that is the real story, especially now when you know it's getting so much cheaper to start a company and you know run servers and all of that. That
anyone can start a company,
run fast and get the details right and keep up with the changes are really what creates success. And that is a stressful, dramatic thing. But it's probably a bit more subtle than what some viewers might want to see.
That's him, Joseph Smart, who's software engineer at Google and co-founder of Google Plus. And here's a web comment. There is no culture. How else do you explain the hundreds of luxury commuter buses you see rolling around town full of Silicon Valley employees who would rather live in the city? Let's talk about this divide. I mean, San Francisco and Silicon Valley, what the center of Silicon Valley, one assumes geographically, is in Silicon Valley, but it's become in many ways located a lot of it in San Francisco.
I think it's a loose term that people use for it to include the Bay Area. Really, I mean, it's not necessarily geographically just south of San Francisco.
Yeah, but it is definitely moving up here big time. Yeah. I mean, the buildings we see going up and the new firms coming in and, of course, Twitter's presence. And
young people want to live in the city. Until they have kids and they get married, then they'd prefer to live out of the city and have a bit more room. But
and it's in no small part because of those faceless buses. I mean, lots of companies, Google among them, started letting people live in the city and, you know, ferrying them back and forth. And so now you have all these young people living in the city and they sort of think, maybe I should do a company here as well. And so you have seen this flourishing of startups in San Francisco, and you have a lot more people living densely together, like especially, you know, in the Mission District and places like that. And so if there's going to be a kind of nightlife culture that emerges, that kind of dynamic is probably what's going to bring it out, because the South Bay is so geographically diffuse that there's sort of no center hub where you can have whatever drama supposedly goes on.
Except for Bucks.
yeah, you get some great publicity here, Jameson. By the way, we're also getting a lot of really interesting emails and Facebook. In fact, let me tell you how you can contribute your own thoughts and join this conversation. There are a number of ways you can. First of all, call us, of course. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your involvement in the program, and that's one way. Another way is by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or posting any questions or comments you have on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment, or going to our Facebook page. And lots of responses. Let me get some of them from the Facebook page. Let me go to some web comments and emails first. Here's an email. Thoughts on my recent 5 years in Silicon Valley. One, completely shallow and materialistic culture. Two, people will believe whatever rumor they hear is truth. Three, geeks with money, young and old, thinking they are superior to you simply because of that. Sorry, you're still fat and bald and untalented. This is signed anonymous, by the way. Four, 75% office vacancy, a wasteland of dead dot-coms everywhere. And five, shallow and fleeting culture. Nothing lasts there for very long, personally or professionally. Now, that sounds pretty cynical.
This might be someone better suited to living somewhere else.
There's a nice self-selection that happens in Silicon Valley.
People said that about the gold rush, too, that it was fleeting. It didn't last very long, and it didn't have a permanence. But it brought huge numbers of people. It changed the whole focus of a nation to the West Coast. So I think all the ancillary things that happened are uncountable.
I also want to tell listeners that we're having some fun on the Facebook page today. In an effort to parse out exactly what Silicon Valley culture is, we're asking you, our listeners, to finish this thought. You know you're in Silicon Valley when blank. And listeners, please visit our Facebook page or our website and tell us what you think. Is there a Silicon Valley culture? And if so, what defines it? Now, I have some Facebook responses already. I just want to read them. You know you're in Silicon Valley when everybody you see during lunch has a badge dangling from their belt loop. You're the only woman in line at Pete's or Trader Joe's or Lulu's. People take pictures in front of corporate buildings. When you can't have a conversation without hearing the phrases, I'm working at a startup, or we're in stealth mode space, or we just got funding. When you're at a party in a mansion and everyone has a drink in one hand and their smartphone in the other. Thanks to Jesse Wang, Megan Lake Workman, Andreas Kral, Ron DeMarco, and Rewadi Parmuk for those thoughts. And you can add yours to.
I have one to add.
Those are all pretty accurate.
You know you're in Silicon Valley when you're stoked. You live in the city, but your company and you're the CEO of the company finally has a billboard on 101.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my friends did that with HipChat.
Yeah, see? and you do a Facebook update about that. I noticed that the other day with my friend who has a company called Huddle. He lives in the city, but he was definitely stoked that his company now has a billboard on 101.
Still a lot of traffic on 101 in case you think all the action's in the city.
Did you use the word stoked?
Yes. I did.
That is so great. Everything is coming back. I mean, we're still playing the Beatles there. Nothing has changed since my era.
And they say we don't have culture.
Well, speaking about the old days, I just want to give James McNiven's a little bit of biographical heft here to the fact that he actually worked for Steve Jobs at one time. When Jobs was sleeping on a mattress and having you do work with, in your contractor days. What I'm interested in is some people use a kind of continuum with these archetypal figures. They have Steve Jobs at one end, who lived a fairly modest life, and Larry Ellison at the other end.
That's true. You know, Steve was an authentic character. We went couch shopping once, and he couldn't pick a couch. And then later I saw him in that iconic photo on the floor, and I realized he'd tried to get a couch, but he really just couldn't do it. Because he thought, you know, if there's not a couch I like better than sitting on the floor, I'm going to sit on the floor. And for decades, I thought he was an idiot.
There wasn't the perfect couch.
And then one day,
Steve Jobs couldn't be a couch potato.
Yeah, and then one day I realized there was a real majesty in that. He really set a tone.
Their standards.
Yeah, he did that with everything. It drove everyone nuts around him, me included. But there was a real majesty there.
Look at Zuckerberg. I mean, Zuckerberg. I mean, he's a schlump, basically. That's what we would call. I mean, the way he dresses, he gets up in front as a CEO. He doesn't look or have any of the kind of appearance of being a CEO. Some, in fact, say that that's maybe hurt him in the stock and whatnot. But that's kind of Silicon Valley culture, isn't it?
A few years ago, someone spilled red wine on his tennis shoes. He said, hey, watch that. Those are my only shoes.
All right. Here's the listener, David, who says, I love the culture in Silicon Valley. I moved here 15 years ago because of it. The culture is as much meritocracy as you'll find anywhere. Yes, there's some childishness because many tech geeks are challenged when it comes to social skills, but there's also a great deal of creativity, intellectual firepower, low tolerance for poor performance, willingness to take risks, and work really hard for what you believe in.
Yeah, I think that's, absolutely. I think that that's one of the things that this show is not going to be able to tap into, because it's not going to make for good television, and what subcultures like the programmer culture that I've written about also miss. I mean, I find that engineering culture is this amazing meritocracy. It's this marketplace of ideas. And as we're seeing the technology hurdles come down, it really feels like anybody with an idea can go to the internet, the greatest textbook, in the history of our society, and really find people to collaborate with and the tools that they're going to need to build something for themselves.
Tasmina Raj again is interactive editor for Mother Jones. Here's Dave, who writes on our website, my family moved to Silicon Valley in 1969 when the men landed on the moon. I went to high school there, college at UC Berkeley. I now split my time midweek between a trailer park in Sunnyvale and main residence in Pebble Beach. I'm a geek's geek, having worked with the likes of Seymour Cray, lived in Minneapolis, Colorado, France, and Switzerland, leveraging always my tech background. Independent contractor for the last 20 years, I've seen many ups and downs in Silicon Valley, always keeping my ties here. I can by no means be considered rich. My motivation for the tech work has always been the advancement of science, which the San Francisco Bay Area has a rich history of supporting. My circle has coined a new term for the latest Silicon Valley inhabitants, greedlings. Another web comment, not generally well paying. Ah, true. Silicon Valley is money, period. Futurist? Yes, if future makes believe crops. We want more of this future. Well, we'll bring more of your interactivity into this. And I just want to remind you who's with us for this hour. Susan McTavish Best, entrepreneur, formerly head of her own public relations firm for startups, now has a project called livingmctavish.com, featuring tips for entertaining and also giving advice, I think, for many of these so-called geeks that we're talking about here in terms of how to live. Joseph Smar's with us, software engineer at Google and co-founder of Google Plus. Seamus McNiven, owner of Bucks of Woodside, which is Silicon Valley hub where a lot of deals are made. And Tasmin Raja, investigative editor for Mother Jones, who did an article about Silicon Valley in Mother Jones. And again, we welcome your involvement. We're asking again this Facebook question for those of you who want to go to our Facebook page and in an effort to parse exactly what Silicon Valley culture is. We're asking you to finish the thought. You know you're in Silicon Valley when? Visit our Facebook page or our website, kqed.org/forum. Tell us what you think. Is there a Silicon Valley culture? More when we return. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Bravo is launching a new reality television show called Silicon Valley, profiling what I guess they're hyping as the decadent lifestyles of the young rich entrepreneurs. And some in the tech industry are saying they're nervous about being mischaracterized. We're looking at the tech industry lifestyle. I always loathe that word. Susan Sontag said, if you have a lifestyle, does it mean you have a life? But we're also asking you, our listeners, to weigh in. Is there a culture in Silicon Valley? What do you think of the culture in Silicon Valley, and how do you define it? And we have a number of people here who certainly have a great deal of knowledge on that score. Tasneem Raja is an investigative editor for Mother Jones, and Jameis McNiven is the owner of Bucks at Woodside, which is a real hub in Silicon Valley. A lot of deals made there. Joseph Smar is a software engineer at Google and co-founder of Google Plus, and Susan McTavish Best is an entrepreneur, formerly head of her own public relations firm for startups, and now in charge of livingmctavish.com, which features tips for entertaining, actually cooking as well.
It does. Recipes. I'm working on a cookbook.
And many...
a little bit of everything.
Many high-tech people have marched through and passed through her home. Well, I said well-known party giver as well. I want to bring Kara Swisher into this discussion. I call her the queen of all things digital, but she's actually co-executive editor of All Things Digital, a website that's devoted to news, analysis, and opinion on technology, the internet, and the media. It's owned by Dow Jones, publisher of Wall Street Journal. Welcome, Kara.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, good to have you here. You're not as upset as a lot of these people over this new Silicon Valley Bravo thing.
I don't care.
That's a good Kara response.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's reality television. It's not going to depict. I mean, do you really think Beverly Hills House, I mean, some Beverly Hills Housewives behave like that, but, you know, these shows are just cartoons of these cultures, and so they're meant to be entertaining and they're meant to be silly, and so
it's drama.
Well, we've been talking about the culture such as it is, or maybe in Silicon Valley. And
such that it isn't, actually. Well, it is and isn't. It's kind of a mixed bag.
Well, tell us from your perspective.
Well, you know, just it's very similar. I compare it to, like, Hollywood. It's company town. And people like to gather together in analog places a lot of the time. And there's such as Palo Alto and at Bucks and various places. And there is a certain, you know, like any tribe, there's rules to it of how you get funded, how you interact with people and their status and things like that, a little like a high school where there's constantly changing people who are in charge.
More high school than middle school?
you know, sometimes a kindergarten. You know, it's very typical of a very tight, small, insular culture, and that's what Silicon Valley is. It's very analog in many ways, whether it's in San Francisco or down in Palo Alto or down in San Jose. And so, you know, you're never going to be able to depict the culture. The problem with the show is that, you know, it's not as interesting as the show needs it to be. There's got to be dating and crisis and, you know, constant agonizing. And people who are actually doing the companies that are successful don't have time for that and don't have those kind of lives.
But it is a youth-oriented culture, isn't it?
Partially. You know, I always say in Silicon Valley, the young eats its old. But it's the young idea. It doesn't necessarily have to be a young person, although that's sort of the mythical depiction. You know, the most important person in Silicon Valley over the last many, many years was Steve Jobs, and he was not a young man. You know, there's several people that are critically important. It just depends on how young and fresh the ideas are and how much sustainability they have.
But what about this idea that the culture is changing the world, that those ideas are changing the world, and changing it for the good, I might add?
Oh, that's another canard of Silicon Valley. They're always saying, you know, they're making a filter for a photo, and they say they're changing the world. you know, okay, I guess they're changing the world, but I can have nice pictures of my children up on the Internet, but I don't feel like that's life-changing. One of the things I think about a lot lately is how many big minds are chasing small ideas right now. There's not a lot of big things happening because the big thing happened, the Internet, which is a big, huge idea and a big conceptual leap and a leap for humanity, the ability to have a worldwide network of information. But, you know, there's a couple very big ideas, such as the Google car is one of them. Even though people make fun of it, it's a really important concept of changing commuting and energy and everything like that. But they're very few and far between, these big ideas. A lot of it's little apps and little ideas and games and stuff like that. And so the question is, you know, is it doing good just by having these things, or is it just more entertainment for the masses?
Kara Swisher, co-executive editor of All Things Digital. Kara, thanks for joining us.
No problem.
And we're going to be joined by you, our listeners. But first, some more thoughts from listeners on Silicon Valley culture. You know you're in Silicon Valley when you see everyone in a Starbucks panic when the Wi-Fi goes down. Everyone around you considers 12:30 p.m. Pacific to be a completely reasonable time to start the workday. When every word has a hashtag in front of it, you refer to yourself as your name, .0 after joining a gym. The dude driving the car with the Google vanity plates is actually a Google founder. There are more Teslas in one square mile than in the rest of the United States. And you know you're in Silicon Valley when you spot Paul Graham at a restaurant and want to eavesdrop without signing an NDA. That's from John Peter, Brandoni, Brad, Martha, and Craig. Let's go to your calls.
Those are all winners.
And we'll, yeah, very good ones. We'll go first, of course, to Saratoga. Armin, good morning.
Hi. Very brief comment here. I moved here from the East Coast 4 years ago, and to me, the Valley is basically like Manhattan stretched to 100 miles or so. And a lot of the personal struggles or challenges are remind me of John Dospassa's novel USA. It's, you know, you have immigrants, you have people from different states here, often working in an environment very different than what they were brought up in, and going against their culture, original culture norm.
I don't want to sound another cynicism, but I wonder how many people in Silicon Valley have read that whole trilogy by John Dos Passos. I mean, it's not really what you'd associate as a literary culture, or for that matter, a culture supporting the fine arts, and maybe that's unfair. What do you think? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's not so much about having that, you know, have knowledge of a lot of novels, but it's more about being a sort of a cooker sort of environment where your background faced with sort of the modern modern activities like programming and development of new companies. It's just a pressure cooker that I think generates a lot of interesting sense.
Well, you touched on how much it's an immigrant culture, too, whether it's emigres like you from Manhattan or immigrants from abroad. Then I'm getting some head nodding here.
Great international food as a result, too. And I mean, I think that also contributes to this notion of it being a meritocracy, because you have all these people from completely different backgrounds and cultures. And so you really can't judge somebody based on where they came from, because like you said, they might be the founder of the company or they might be the founder of the next big company.
And can you talk about the integration in the culture, Tasneem?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I actually like about the show is that it features at least one female founder of a new company. You know, I've been really excited to see that, especially after my article on the programmer culture came out, which, of course, is problematic in that it's a culture that's also laced with sexism and some misogynistic language around women in the workplace. So there's this idea that programmers are all men, and that when you're marketing, saying things like want to bro down and crush code, there's this deep-seated, almost subconscious perception that, of course, a programmer is like a young guy in a hoodie and probably a white male, right? So I was actually pretty heartened by the number of female programmers and male programmers who passed my story around saying, you know, this is a problem. This is actually bad for the industry, because it's really hard to fill seats in companies because of this insanely tight competitive market. It's a developer's market out there, right? So if you're actively discouraging like half of your available talent pool from even getting in the door, that's actually bad business. So, you know, there's some really great efforts out there. For instance, I'd like to point to SkillCrush and Women Who Code, a couple mm-hmm. organizations that are working to create spaces where women or, you know, really, really anybody who feels like there aren't great mainstream opportunities for them to learn programming can get more involved.
Well, we're also talking about the international flavor of Silicon Valley, and Susan McTavish Best, I think somebody once pointed out, this is not a restaurant culture like San Francisco is, which is maybe why a lot of the people in Silicon Valley live in San Francisco.
That's true. You know, actually, I don't spend a huge amount of time in Silicon Valley. I tend to stick mostly in San Francisco. So I can't really speak to the restaurants other than Bucks down in the valley.
I mean, the international restaurants.
Oh, international. Like there's definitely a fantastic
there's great international plethora up and down the coast, up
international
and down the valley.
Restaurants. Yeah. Yeah. But it is an international culture. You know, I grew up in the UK and went to university in England. And at the time when I was at university there, being an entrepreneur wasn't a word that I even really knew. And I still had to write my essays using a fountain pen. And then maybe 6 or 7 years later, I was invited back with a couple of others to go back to Oxford. And by then, the Oxford Entrepreneurs Club had become the largest society at Oxford University. There's this massive change sort of over 8 or 10 years. And now there's a fairly big community of folks from the UK who are here that just weren't here 15 years ago. And they're very entrepreneurial, which to me was not typically British or English, you know.
What about, Joseph, let me go to you on this. The role that Stanford plays in Silicon Valley culture, it's central, isn't it? It's a fulcrum.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, coming from Stanford, it was amazing to see Silicon Valley just pouring out from Stanford, and then, of course, vice versa. All the people who are making these great companies are coming to Stanford and helping get students excited. I mean, when I first arrived in 98, you know, Larry and Sergey were building Google down the hall from me, and it was like a little Google project at Stanford. And then, you know, they basically got kicked out because they were destroying the network from, you know, all the web crawling that they were doing. And that's just continued since then. And so it's, you know, I think that's one of the kind of life sources. I think of it like the warm deep sea vent that is, you know, the source of life that, you know, keeps things going. Plus the people that then make money, stick around in Silicon Valley and fund the next generation. So you have this sort of classic self-feeding
system. I think that's very key here as far as the culture is that once folks make money here, they reinvest it back into.
And boy, do they give money to Stanford. I just have to tell one quick anecdote. I taught a course at Stanford last year, and I asked Tobias Wolff, who's a professor at Stanford, to come to my class, and he said, I'll meet you by the Rodin statues and learn that there are two places where there are Rodin statues. I mean, talk about culture and talk about money. Boy.
More Rodin than anywhere outside Paris.
Fantastic. That's right. Museum.
But, you know, that whole integration with Stanford and the community goes back over 100 years to Lee DeForest and the vacuum tube. And, you know, one thing, those negative comments earlier, that you get a lot of that, but we have to remember that the typical arc of the entrepreneur in the Valley is business and then family and then philanthropy, because it's a very liberal culture.
In that order?
Well, very often it's that order. And you look at Jeff Skoll, who's you know, he co-founded eBay, and now the Skoll Foundation is a contributor to KQED and many other places, and he's made a real difference, and a lot of people are following that path. A lot of people said Larry Ellison, he never gives anything.
No, it's not.
That's
true.
Completely changed.
No,
now
it's not true.
He's very philanthropic and becoming more so. So this is a great trend.
And we'll bring in more of our callers. We'll go to Pleasant Hill. Steve, you're on. Hi.
Hi, Mike, and guests. Very good program. I'm glad to hear this. I grew up down there, and just to date myself, it wasn't called Silicon Valley at the time. So I probably won't be watching the TV show.
When you were there, it had orchards, right?
Yeah, I grew up right around orchards, all everywhere. I was surrounded by them, and it was none of that is there. In fact, the place I went to high school was a vineyard I used to play in as a kid, so that's, you know, that's how quick it was changing right under my feet. But, you know, and I hate to throw a note of doom in all of this. I mean, you know, everybody's celebrating now Silicon Valley and its boom, sort of a long-term boom cycle. But, you know, these kind of industries are the ones, these are the smokestack industries of the future. And I think the future is what's really being missed here. You know, there's a certain element of destruction and acquisition involved in all of this. That's not really being mentioned while everybody's celebrating this thing, you know, coming together and generating new work and generating new ideas and a new way to do business. I'm happy with all that, but there's a downside, and that's, you know, we still have to dig all this stuff out of the earth to make it happen. And, you know, I hope everybody's got that long-term interest in mind, not just the next Tesla or whatever.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought this up, Steve, because I think it's safe to say, and let me go to you on this, Seamus McDivitt. There's a lot of environmental-minded sense to this culture and ecological sense.
Well, there is. Unfortunately, we see a lot of that getting kicked to the curb now with natural gas and the diminished outlook for alternative fuels, because it's all so price-driven. Green was on everybody's lips 7-8 years ago, and now it's not even the top 5 topics.
Here's Joseph in San Jose, who's talking about conformity in the Valley. Joseph, go ahead. You're on.
Hi. Good morning. Totally loving the show. I just want to say also that I agreed with Kara about the cartoon concept of the Bravo shows. I watch them all, and I totally agree with that. What I called in about was that I'm interested in the subject of people conforming to fit into what they think the Valley culture looks like. And it seems to me from my experience and my work that there's an air of what the tech worker or exec should look like without concern for individuality. And I guess ultimately I find that this is at odds with the thought leadership that our best companies in the area build and promote through their products and services.
Is it a kind of conformity of nonconformity? I mean, you always associate Steve Jobs wearing jeans and, you know, again, Zuckerberg dressing down and all that.
Yeah, I would say there's also probably a lot more toleration of flamboyant idiosyncrasy in Silicon Valley, because if the person's brilliant, then, you know,
looking like wavy gravy or something.
Some of that. But then, you know, just more modern, too. I think that a lot of young people like to, you know, express themselves personally in weird ways and how they dress and how they act. But because everyone around here knows that, well, that guy might be brilliant in the next big deal, there's this sort of tolerance that comes with that,
Do
I think.
Do you see a lot of piercings and purple hair and stuff like you see in San Francisco?
You see your share of it.
Yeah. I think you see a lot more in San Francisco. But were you going to say something?
You know, I think Kara made another good point, which was that there's definitely a concern that like some of the best minds of our generation are applying themselves to making it really easy for an ad to follow you all around the internet, right? So I think some of the entrepreneurial spirit that we should be celebrating also should be not about like looking down at your phone all the time, right? But trying to solve problems, as you know, James was alluding to, that are outside the social network generation model.
Let me go to some of the comments that are coming in here, and a lot of them coming in. Ramin writes, the reason why Silicon Valley culture is bland is that the area actually has no depth. The talent is actually surprisingly shallow. It can be summed up as software and hardware and not much else. Most engineers here, even though talented in their specific area, have no long-term vision. Engineers are the fry cooks of Silicon Valley.
No long-term vision, no. True. We don't know what's going to happen in 10 years. I would say that's correct.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah, and that's what makes Silicon Valley so special. You've had, even since I've been here, you know, we talked about, you know, my only 12 or 14 years, multiple turns of the crank of what people were working on. You know, Silicon Graphics was this huge deal when I came out here, and then those people have splintered and founded the next generation of companies, and those people leave and found the next, and you have the number of ex-Facebook people starting companies, right? And I still think of them as a young company. So I mean, that's partly what makes Silicon Valley so special.
I wonder what you say to this, Joseph Smar, web comment. Is this a culture that has any relationship with the natural world? Do they see themselves as part of it or apart from it? Isn't this a generation that grew up with technology infused in their lives? In other words, are you all virtual, as Howard Rheingold might want to ask?
Well, actually, I think there's a wonderful appreciation of the outdoors around Silicon Valley. I mean, I know so many people who love to bike and hike and, you know, go pick berries down at the farms and all this sort of stuff to kind of get back to nature, partly because, you know, the Bay Area is this beautiful place. And I think you see that echoed further up the Pacific Northwest into Portland and Seattle, where you have that kind of tech, but also really loving to be out in our environment. And I like that myself.
I think that's one of the huge reasons to live here.
Susan McTavish Best.
And why people stay here as well is because we just have this amazing playground, whether it's in the South Bay or in the North, or people kite surfing and road biking and mountain biking was born upon Mount Tam. And it's just a fantastic playground, and you get to work and do what you love doing.
And talk about playgrounds, though, and Susan, maybe you can answer this. Not such a great playground for young women. I mean, there are a lot of men, one hears, in Silicon Valley. In fact, the men outnumber the women.
I think
so
that
it
makes
should
it
be,
a good playground.
Well, it should be a great playground. But I hear these complaints that the men are lacking in, you know, the sort of thing we're hearing about the stereotyping,
yeah,
lacking in social skills and not as commitment phobes and that sort of thing.
I don't know. I think a little patience and serve them some good food and strong drinks. And you'll find they're like men everywhere else.
Somebody wrote in, the odds are good, but the goods are odd.
That's one of the fantastic things here is that the folks here are a little bit odd, mm-hmm, men and women. And I think a lot of the people who are successful here, you know, they're engineers. They were misfits a little bit in college.
But I think most of them actually have good hearts. I think compared to a lot, yeah, of other cultures that create a lot of wealth, the number of sort of jerks in our culture is very low.
The cheese factor is very low here.
Yeah, and so you can find someone who's – and also I think, you know, speaking as a geek myself, who's – my wife has certainly trained me a lot in how to be,
yeah,
more socially available and how to dress better and all of that. And so I think a lot of geeks want to be trained. They're not intentionally socially misfit. They've never had good role models.
You will have a good marriage if you keep listening to her. Rest assured. Wow. Let me go. There's that old saw that marriages last when men follow the orders of their wives. Let me go to some more calls here. Jane, hi. You're on.
Hi there. This is Jane from Saratoga. I'm thoroughly enjoying your show. It's a fabulous discussion. But I think you're overlooking the silicon in Silicon Valley. And I'm wondering if your panel is aware that this week, in fact, where I'm headed right now, is the largest semiconductor equipment conference is being held in San Francisco this week. And here, the discussions really aren't about how to, as Kara said, develop a new filter for your camera. It's much more how can we stack more chips so that we can fuel more multifunctional iPhones, or how can we develop the next electronic material to strip the cancer-causing coating out of water bottles, plastic water bottles. So I think some of these lovely roots are being overlooked in the discussion this morning. And I would go back to your last caller's comment or Facebook comment, who suggested that there's a lack of talent in Silicon Valley, which is absolutely not the case. This week you see so many physicists, chemists, engineers, material scientists right here in Silicon Valley. It's fantastic.
I think the reality is that the silicon of Silicon Valley doesn't necessarily make great reality TV. That's probably why it's being overlooked right now.
Well, there is this
maybe
weird,
not Silicon, but Silicon.
Yeah.
There is this weird cultural dichotomy, though, between what I think of as the real Silicon Valley of people
sure.
making hardware and
sure.
then all this internet software. That's true. They sort of inhabit yeah. different worlds, but they're obviously, you know, you think about NVIDIA and you think about what happened. All these guys are doing amazing work.
Yeah.
Well, more of you know you're in Silicon Valley, thanks to Chris, who says, you know you're in Silicon Valley when guys try to impress their dates by bragging how late they worked, when thank you notes are tweeted, and when formal attire means tying your sneaker laces. Let's get another call on, and Saranya from Palo Alto. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to echo some of what the last caller said about, you know, the foundation of Silicon Valley being the people who make the chips and who design the chips that make the computers where people can then develop all these tweet little apps for our phones. And, I mean, not that I'm disparaging that, because I have friends who are out of college and have started up these companies to make these really cool apps that, you know, search for, like, bike routes through San Francisco or whatever else you want. But, you know, people like my dad are what I imagine, like, the backbone of Silicon Valley to be in Silicon Valley culture, you know. I mean, they're basically really intelligent, like, constantly thinking about, you know, how to develop something new, science-y all the time. And they go to a lot of meetings. They do a lot of PowerPoint presentations. And I agree, it's not great reality TV, but I feel like that's really Silicon Valley culture. And, like, the San Francisco culture is maybe something different.
Well, thank you for those comments. Actually, I'm looking at a comment from Elaine that dovetails, and it goes back to what you said before, James McNiven, about the unpredictability is still a work in progress. Elaine writes, don't you think Silicon Valley is an experiment and concentrating a very lot of people with high intelligence into a small area and seeing what happens? Not really predictable. I think this is more the case than in any other section in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, looking at the way that the technology coming out of Silicon Valley intersects with existing industries. I mean, speaking as a journalist, you know, we use products developed by Google all the time in our efforts to do more with data-driven journalism, with interactive journalism, for instance. So it's fascinating to watch the way that other sectors take the tools coming out of this area and apply it to totally transform the way we do our work all over the place.
Let me bring Khadisha. Khadisha, you're on with us. Good morning.
I'm on with you. Thank you for taking my call. It's a very interesting conversation. It's one of the issues, technology and science and math. I'm a teacher in the Bay Area, and I've always pushed my students to focus on those areas. And I've noticed that every time when the conversation does come down to diversifying the Silicon Valley area, we talk a lot about how we've increased the female population down there, but we never go to talking about have we done well for our minority groups from the Bay Area and California and nationwide, actually. And I think you have a lot of talent out there at these colleges that are African American and Latinos, but I don't see them down there at Silicon Valley in these companies. They do talk about the fact that they are increasing their minority groups, but those groups are not African American and Latino kids coming out of colleges. And I really think that Silicon Valley needs to start focusing on that because you're missing a big pool of talent.
I think most people in Silicon Valley, higher-ups, would agree with that. And I'm wondering if there's much of a middle class in Silicon Valley. We talk about all the wealth and then all the service people. And where's the middle class?
There isn't a middle class. You know, I see it in my restaurant, and it breaks my heart because we do have those liberal tendencies, and we do have this severe class system. And you see it in the poor parts of Redwood City and it's a continual challenge. That's why the craziness on the right drives me nuts, and because we're not reaching for a solution at this point.
Well, and I think the middle class in Silicon Valley might be considered upper middle class in a lot of places,
sure.
But it's still poor compared to the really wealthy people around, right? So I think for most of us who have made some money and can finally afford to buy a house in the area, we still think of ourselves as middle class because, mm-hmm. you know, we're neither poor nor rich.
Try to get another call on here, and that's you, John. Hi.
Hey, Mike. John O'Connell, I did a lot of organization development, strategy, and team development, working with groups in the Valley as well as across the country. And my observation is that, one, as Kara Swisher was right on point, is the TV show is trivial and, you know, it's just exploitive. But the the culture and the people in Silicon Valley, I think, seem to be at just one step up from the general culture and business of trying to do something worthwhile and good for the world, and not just change the world, but make it better. So, you know, my hope is amidst all the exploitation of the TV show, it'll actually capture some of the good and the people that are really trying to do something better for the world in Silicon Valley.
Well, thank you for that. Certainly, it's a good anthem that Google has always had, Joseph Smar, your employer, do no evil and all that. One would think that that means do good or as much good as you can. But the ethos of Silicon Valley is complicated, and I think we've touched on a lot of important elements of it here this morning. And I want to thank all our guests for being with us. Joseph Smar is a software engineer at Google, co-founder of Google Plus, and Jameis McNiven is the owner of Bucks at Woodside, a Silicon Valley hub. And Tasneem Raja is an interactive editor for Mother Jones, and Susan McTavish-Best is an entrepreneur. Her new project is livingmctavish.com. Entrepreneur, you got to get used to that from those Oxford days, right,
where
the word didn't exist. Thank you all for being with us. Thanks also to Kara Swisher, who was also with us earlier on, and thanks to you, our listeners. Forum is, and remind you, by the way, you can always continue this discussion on our website simply by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment, or going to our Facebook page and continuing to grapple with the question of, you know, you're in Silicon Valley when. And always remind you, you can let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum or suggest any ideas by calling our listener call-in response line at 415-553-3300. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Amanda Stupai, Tina Lauerberg, and Susan Britton. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer this morning is Danny Bringer. Our interns are Asal Sanapur, Jessica Chung, Emily Holzman, Shelby Pope, Joshua Rafeman, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Also want to mention that the music you hear on Forum, and let's give him his props, we don't do that enough, is from the well-known and certainly much admired Mike Marshall. Thank you for being a part of this morning's program, and for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.